Google has the power to rig the election. They've been caught rigging the election already, not just in the United States, but meddling in Ireland and meddling in Brazil. And, you know, this is the technocracy. This is the biggest threat that we face in America right now is Google. We're going to stop the censorship on YouTube. So the fascists of 100 years ago burned books. And the fascists of today burn bits. Every single time a video gets deleted off of YouTube, every single time a site gets delisted from the Google index, that's an act of burning bits. And so we're going to stop the burning of bits with our Stop Bit Burning campaign.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Spiro. Thanks for tuning in. In case you missed it, my last report was censored by YouTube. The video was only up for about 30 minutes before it was removed, but you can still see it right now at activistpost.com and on BitChute. I then uploaded the video to Twitter and immediately had my account locked, but I got it back. But going forward, we're going to talk about more censorship here and the social engineers in general. And joining me today to discuss this is Zach Voorhees, who is a Google whistleblower. You can find him at zachvoorhees.com. Zach, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. And if people want to find me on Twitter, look up Perpetual Maniac.
Absolutely. I'll be sure to leave links to anything and everything you'd like in the show notes below. You do have a huge following on Twitter. You're always very active on there. And I follow your account. It's a great account. Now, Google is perhaps the most powerful and influential corporation on the planet at this point. And for those who might not be familiar with your story, what was your position at Google and how long did you work there?
So I worked at the company for 8.5 years. The first sort of section that I worked there was for the Google Earth team. And then I left to start a company called Zachies.com. It's a cycling bicycle glove, actually, with LEDs on the back. And that company's still running, but I made a lot more money working for, you know, corporate tech. So I went back to Google and worked at their YouTube division, working on the embedded YouTube app that is on the game consoles, that's on the TVs. Specifically, I worked on the NX Switch and the Xbox and a little bit of the PS4 port of the YouTube embedded app.
Now, being at Google, you were essentially in the belly of the beast, and you had access to all sorts of internal and confidential information not available to the public. What did you uncover there at Google that made you decide to come forward, blow the whistle, and walk away from what many would consider a very high-paying dream job?
Right. So I want to say that working at Google/YouTube, which is owned by Google, was a dream. And everything that you've heard about the company and how great it is to its employees is 100% true. It wasn't until I came back to Google working for the YouTube division that I immediately saw that there was problems. It was about 3 months after I got hired. So I got hired in August of 2016. And then the elections happened in November of 2016. And I was so done with politics at that point that I had checked out. I didn't vote for Clinton. I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for anyone. I thought it was just a crap show. So, and then to my surprise, really, Trump won. And I was like, oh, cool, that's great. You know, a change up. Maybe we'll have, you know, some differences now. And I thought I was just going to return back to Google and people would be upset, but that's just politics and we would move on. Wow, I couldn't be more wrong. Google was freaking out. The employees were freaking out. The management was freaking out. The C-level executives were freaking out. And it all came to a head when they had a meeting about 1 week after the election. And in this meeting, they said some really inappropriate things for the C-level executives, saying that, for example, Sergey Brin, the founder, said that he was personally offended at the election of Donald Trump. And that he thought that this nationalism would just be like a blip on the screen in history. The CFO recounted how she was having a discussion with the New York office about how they were going to lose this election. And I'm like, lose this election? It's not Google's to lose. It's the American people's election. But the most shocking thing for me, and it actually went over most of everybody else's head, the significance, was a question asked by the CEO, Sundar Pichai, about what the most effective thing that Google had done during the election. And his response was very troubling. He said that it was the suppression of fake news by their machine learning algorithms, and that they were going to be expanding on that. And I went, wait a minute, we're filtering fake news? Like, when was that decision made? Because, you know, their mission statement is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. When did Google get into the business of filtering fake news? So I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to figure out what this fake news definition is, because I just like to research. It's kind of my deal. So I just start like browsing through the company. And keep in mind, Google was a very open company because of Eric Schmidt. And so as a result, I can just go and look at what other teams are doing. So I started looking at what the fake news team was doing. And they actually had like, I use the term team loosely, but they had like an organization that was generating design documents on defining what exactly fake news was. And when I looked through the definitions, it turned out that like 4 out of 5 all had to do with Hillary Clinton. And I was just like, wait a minute. Is this about filtering fake news, or is this about, you know, helping a candidate? Seemed to be like it was a political play. And so I thought to myself, well, if there's, you know, such a thing as fake news that's going to be defined at the company, then there's going to be something that executes the fake news classification and removes them from the search, the YouTube, the Google News. And so I sought to try to find out what that project was, and I found it. And the name of the project was called Machine Learning Fairness. And over the course of a couple of years, I gathered intelligence on this from within inside the company with publicly available documents. And when I was grabbing them, I was just grabbing them for myself, because at the time I was like, no one's going to believe this. This is really out there, but I need to have physical evidence for myself so that I know that I'm not going crazy. I saw Google essentially start doing seditious activities against the president. They deleted a word out of the Arabic dictionary, kafefe, in order to play into the media's attempt to use the 25th Amendment. And I went, wow, this is sedition, and this is, you know, treasonous. And now, because I know about it, and if I don't say anything, then I'm part of the conspiracy via silence. So that's when I realized that I had to step forward. I had to contact someone that was trustworthy within the media in order to disclose this to the public, no matter what the costs of that would be. And that's how I got connected with Project Veritas. And so they did a sting operation, and the rest is history.
And for those who may not be aware, the kafefe that you're referring to was a tweet that Trump put out, and they tried to basically make him look like he's not mentally there, you know, that he's like losing it. That's why they censored that word, removed it from history, basically, and try to, like you said, build their case for the 25th Amendment to remove him for being, you know, not having the mental capacity there. I mean, that's incredible to see and to hear. And I am going to leave a link for the Project Veritas reports. They're fantastic. They're a great organization that where they had you on their programs. Now, you ended up taking information, like 950 plus pages of information from Google, and they were in your possession. And how did Google find out about this? What was your, you know, like, how did that all go down after? Like, what was their response after you had taken this information from Google?
Well, I knew that there was going to be a log file, because we're all logged. But I also know that because of the overwhelming amount of data and the relative immaturity of AI, they can't really figure out what the signal is from the noise. So I knew that once I came out, that there was a good chance, even anonymously, that Google would be able to quickly triangulate my position. And that's actually what happened. So when I came out on Project Veritas in June of 2019, I was under the cover of anonymity. So I had a hat and a, you know, kind of a poncho like thing. And I didn't reveal, and my voice was changed. So I didn't reveal who I was. And what my intentions were was I was just going to leak enough so that it would show the people that were accusing Google of being biased that there was literally something there and that they could then use that in order to find out more information. But I had a debate about whether to disclose the whole thing. And so I actually like didn't know what to do. So I actually just prayed about it. And I got this like overwhelming feeling that I should just like not disclose anymore and just walk away and just continue on with my life, because there was some anger and resentment that I had that because Google was trying to essentially overthrow the country. So I felt that that was a vengeful act to just release all the information. So I walked away. And then they set a really high-priced firm, legal firm, after my ass in order to try to get all the information that I had. I guess they're able to kind of figure out that it was me that was, you know, doing all this like within a couple weeks. So that letter arrived and then I was like, oh boy, I'm in trouble. And I talked to a few lawyers and they're like, oh yeah, they're going to ruin your life now. They're going to essentially drain you of a whole bunch of funds. And I looked at this and I realized that I did not want to get involved into a court of law. I'd rather step into the court of public opinion. So I prayed about it again. And this time I got this overwhelming feeling that I should just let them have it. So I don't know if that was God or what exactly happened. I just know that that was the overwhelming message that I got when I prayed really hard about it. And so what I did is I called up James O'Keefe and I said, look, they're after me now. There's also an anonymous troll that I was able to trick into hitting a link that we controlled. And we were able to see that the IP was actually originating from Google. Like, this is how dumb they are. They literally sent a troll that was from the Google Indianapolis office. And they were trying to harass me and out me and like call out my name because I was all anonymous on Twitter that I was the leaker. So I knew bad things were on my way. So I set up a dead man switch. I said, James O'Keefe, if I die, then all documents go into the public domain. I then go to Twitter and I post essentially the same thing. And there's a, it's still up there. There's a picture of a dragon that's about to kill a guy. He's like got him wrapped up in his tail and then it's like the last finishing blow. The guy like stabs the dragon in the heart. That was my message to Google. Hey, you do this and you know, you whack me and everything's going to come out.
And that's pardon the interruption, Zach. You're not being dramatic when you say this. I mean, this is a very, very powerful organization, wealthy beyond anyone's imagination, powerful. And like you said, they are politicized at this point, and you're about to expose like major, corruption and just all kinds of things that Google kept very close to themselves that they did not want out in the public. So when, you know, I don't think you're being dramatic or blowing this up, at all by any means when you say that you were fearing for your life. I can only imagine.
Oh yeah. I mean, people, there's actually been a lot of plane crashes in the Bay Area and a lot of suspicious deaths of like CEOs and stuff and founders. And so I had no qualms. I mean, I'm dealing with huge firepower. Like Google has a lockdown on the technology of the freaking globe. And I'm challenging that established power. And the only thing that I have as leverage is the fact that I can kind of trigger an awakening by revealing what Google's doing to, you know, the common person that's still asleep about this. So I let them know that you know, they were going to walk into a trap if they did anything. Sure enough, 4 hours later, the cops were at my house trying to get a wellness check on me. And I was like, hey, I'm not going to answer the door, right? Just, they don't know that I'm here. Well, they somehow figured that I was there anyway, so they just set up watch, and maybe they're tracking my cell phone. I'm not entirely sure, but they just assumed that I was there and then shut down the streets from 20th in Valencia to 22nd in Valencia. They used a flimsy excuse to call in a bomb threat and get the bomb squad at my house. What had happened was my roommate, who's super hot, she like does all these like stage performances at like Burning Man and these festivals around California. That's like her gig. And she had left a canister of denatured alcohol that she uses in her fire poi. And so it was this canister that was in a bag. It was like in a brown paper bag. And they looked at it and they said, oh, that could be like an incendiary device. So we got to make sure that it's not like a bomb. So they called in a freaking bomb squad on me. And so I remember I was sitting on my bed trying to get my mind off of all this, playing some video games to just, you know, think about something else. When I started to hear this like helicopter like encircling the house, and it started to get closer, and I was like, no, that would be paranoid to believe that this helicopter is for me. And so I kept on playing the video game, even though my adrenaline was now like raising. And now I hear this other helicopter come. So now there's like two helicopters flying low over my house. And so I get down on my hands and knees, and I crawl next to a window because I'm like on the second floor. So like, I'm not at street level. I'm above looking down on everyone, and I'm able to like get to a window and look up, and there's like a helicopter like just hovering. And I'm like, this could actually be for me. And then I actually got a phone call from my friend who decided that he was going to come visit me and saw that the whole street was blocked off. And he talked to the cops and found out that they were there for me. So now he's calling me trying to talk me out of the house. You know, it's like, I'm talking to them. They're going to set up shifts. They're going to be here for 3 days. And so I decided at one point that, you know, whatever they were going to do, they were going to do. So I might as well do it out in the public with everyone filming their cameras. And then good luck with if they try to do something funny for them to erase all that video. So I talked to the police over the phone and negotiated to come out. I came out, you know, recording with the phone in my hand, which I told them ahead of time that I would do. They gave me permission to go ahead and do that. And there's video actually of me like coming out, sticking my hands up, turning around, putting them behind my head, and then them like detaining me, searching me, and then finally asking me a bunch of questions like, do I want to do any self-harm or kill myself, or do I want to like do any harm to anyone at YouTube? And then finally, you know, and I assumed that it was Google, but I didn't have confirmed evidence until it was the police themselves as the final question asking me, well, why would Google call in this wellness check? And I said, aha, I knew that this is what they were doing to me. You know, and so I said, well, the reason why they would do this is because I'm blowing the whistle on what Google's doing. And I just sent 950 pages to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division. And the cop was like, do you have any evidence of this? And I said, yeah. And I pulled out my phone and I showed it to him. And on the phone was a picture of the letter that I had sent to the DOJ describing the contents of this dossier that I was sending them. So they were like, oh, okay, you're a whistleblower. And, you know, they realized that I wasn't a bad guy, that they were just being used by Google. And I didn't really blame them. I wasn't really upset at them. They're just people doing their jobs. So, you know, if you're just like an easy person to deal with, then they're going to leave you alone. So I joked with them. I asked them which was the most accurate TV show depicting police. And I said, is it like CSI? And they all laughed. They said, no, CSI is not how it happens at all. I was like, well, what's accurate? And they're like, Reno 911. And I said, what? And everyone agreed. The SWAT team agreed. The FBI agreed. The SFPD agreed. Like, they all agreed that Reno 911 was dead on accurate show depicting how the police work.
That's hilarious. That is so funny. But I mean, that's a very serious situation in light of, you know, the Reno 911 part. That's hilarious. But I mean, Google was essentially setting the stage potentially for something bad to happen to you. I mean, just kind of looking at this from the outside, if they can already convince the police, for example, that you may want to harm yourself, then they're setting that narrative. They're establishing that storyline to where if anything did happen to you, they'd be like, "Oh, see? Yeah, see, we thought we'd said he was suicidal." I mean, and then you end up like Epstein or something like that, So, I mean, that's pretty wild story there. So, at this point, Google had sent you this letter from the law firm. What and now they're sending the wellness check after you. What did the letter from the law firm say exactly? Like, what were their list of demands?
Right. So I've gotten a lot of this, like these files from my laptop. So I was afraid that if I gave them the laptop that it would incriminate me. And so I was like sitting here going, God, what do I do about this? Right. So the letter was like, first off, give us a laptop, which I understand, that's fine. But then they were like, we need to look through your personal computer, all the hard drives that you have. We need to have like a neutral third party to come in and catalog. And I was just like, and then they were also asking like, who in the media did I talk to? What files did I retain? Basically, they were trying to get me to admit that I was the leaker. And I knew that any sort of compliance with this was just going to dig my own grave. Like Kevin Cernicke, was totally cooperative and they screwed him. Like, he handed over the laptop when HR ambushed him after handing over the laptop, because he filed a complaint with the National Labor Review Board. And so Google concocted this fictional story that said that Mike Cernicke was attempting to do criminal espionage, right? And so he had to he got tangled up in the courts and it drained $100,000 of his money fighting this frivolous, set of lawsuits against him. And I don't know if he's exited from that. He might still be in the process, but it drained his life savings away. And I knew that that was going to be sort of what they were going to do to me because I talked to his lawyer. And I was like, well, this is what's going to happen. So, I realized as I was thinking about it that, well, if they want the laptop because they want to cover up their crimes and it's part of the chain of evidence. So really, it belongs in Washington, D.C. under law enforcement hands so they can create this antitrust case. So what I did is that's when I set this dossier of 950 pages, I also included the laptop. And then I wrote back to Google, oh, I don't have your laptop anymore. I gave it to law enforcement and go have fun with that. And I don't know whether they ever got their laptop back or not. I haven't asked. But yeah, it's in Washington, D.C., as far as I know. And so then, after that wellness check, I got the heck out of San Francisco. The next day, I was on a flight to Washington, D.C., staying in a safe house because, like, that time before you disclose and the time that you actually disclose is like really dangerous, right? Because that's when they can take you out and then maybe they can stop the disclosure. So I was taking all the security precautions necessary. I almost felt like kind of a James Bond, like someone's trying to kill me. And then, like, the morning before we launched the story on Project Veritas, I was getting like rung off the hook by these lawyers trying to get a hold of me to, I don't know, negotiate like a non-disclosure. But by then, I had already gone through the police thing, and I don't really trust these people that are in these high positions. I think they're liars and crooks now. Like I used to actually believe in the system, but now I'm pretty jaded. So I didn't really want to deal with any of them. I wanted to get it all out of the spotlight so that it could like so that the target would get off my back. And so that's what happened. And then finally, after this whole disclosure happened and it got really big, they ended up sending me like one final letter. And it was like a lot nicer now. Instead of being demanding, they were like, please, can we, can we look, on your personal computer for any documents that still exist? And I said, well, I gave the documents because I believe a crime had been committed. So if there's any documents that I've missed and I find them through the search of my laptop, then I want to let you know that I feel obligated to send those additional documents to the Department of Justice. Please let me know if you want me to proceed. They never said another thing, so I got off of it. So that was the end of that whole legal fiasco.
And so what has developed since then with the Department of Justice? Have they been in touch with you? Has this proceeded or progressed at all in any way?
Well, as you know, the government can be kind of funny sometimes. So because I didn't actually address it to anyone, I just addressed it to the Department of Justice, like Antitrust Division. It turns out that it was going to be put into holding for like up to 6 weeks. So I went to Washington. When I went to Washington, we actually reprinted everything and put it on USB drives and then manually rewalked it into the Department of Justice through a contact that we had that was able to get us an intro. We walked in and we talked to, I can't remember the guy, but he ended up retiring like a year later. But he was like the guy that was like reported to William Barr. And he had two assistants. They took copious notes. We gave him the thumb drives. We gave him, you know, the paper, and gave him pretty much everything. And so, and then, you know, about a month later, the DOJ, the New York City, and 50 state attorneys filed they started an antitrust investigation. So I'm not saying that my evidence was what started that whole thing, but I find that it was pretty coincidental that I deliver this and then a month later they're doing their antitrust divisions and or their antitrust investigations. And now it's actually all 52 state attorney generals. So that's all 50 states plus the two territories. And and now I'm just sort of in a holding pattern waiting to see what's going to happen. Like we just had a hearing last week about the whole antitrust thing with Google and Facebook and the Apple CEOs. And, you know, the content that I disclosed was actually, you know, talked about in these hearings. So, you know, that's impact, and I'm really happy. And I'm hoping that, you know, that impact translates more into just talk and more into action. I think that action is going to happen. Like we're actually pretty much on the verge of something big happening with big tech. And actually, one of the biggest problems is that they're censoring conservatives and anyone that is a dissident reactionary and doesn't like what's going on. But also, a bigger problem is that they're taking all of our data and they're selling it to China.
Yeah, this is data is very valuable, and they've been gathering it up. Excuse me. They've been gathering it up like crazy, and the same thing with like the NSA we've been seeing. You know, they're just gathering every bit of information that they can scrape from you. And you know, these hearings, going back to the hearings from last week, it's you know, it is interesting to see this start to roll out. And yes, some things need to happen, but at the same time, it's like these representatives need to have some experts in there on their side or something, because some of the stuff they seem kind of lost in, you know, but, you know, what was your take overall of the hearings? Did you watch them last week?
I did. I watched the whole 6 hours. And I've actually got some notes here, you know, and essentially what the problem is that they've got these monopolies, right? So let's say like the Apple Store, for example. They've got this app store, and if you want to get on the iPhone, you've got to go through this process, this app store. And they're going to take a 30% commission on every single app that goes through their store. And what they're doing is that they're putting all these, you know, additional things, these constraints on these app developers, and it's making life extremely difficult. And the thing is that Apple's just going ahead and banning some apps without an appeal process. So, for example, there is sort of a counter to Twitter, which is the gab.com. I'm on it. I like it. It's actually some of the most fascinating conversations because it's not censored. Apple just unilaterally canceled them, said, nope, no one can download you from the App Store anymore. Sorry. And that's a big problem if you want, you know, free speech. And, you know, Apple's going to ban a certain class of people, but not ban the other class of people. And, you know, there's something similar happening with Google. And you know, essentially, this data collection apparatus that they have, where they're taking your real-time location data from the cell towers and from the device itself, and feeding this into these black markets, right? So, you know, the Chinese intelligence is, you know, the big one. But it's not just that, it's also other places like, you know, the UK and Israel. And the thing is that, are we getting real-time location data from their citizens? In many instances, no. And so we've got this asymmetrical advantage that we're just giving away to people that are our geopolitical rivals. And that's just not a good thing. And so, you know, the whole meeting was kind of talking about sort of the Chinese threat and data collection, and then also the abuse of their monopolies in order to stifle competition.
Excuse me. And that is a major problem. Monopolies are historically extremely dangerous and oppressive. And, you know, so this is a big problem. And Google is like the equivalent of Skynet, in my opinion. I mean, these are the technocrats, the social engineers that are literally shaping society by manipulating our perceptions of realities. Like, Zach, how powerful would you say Google is, for example?
I mean, it's around a $1 trillion company right now. They own 90% of the search market, about 80% of the mobile phone market. You know, the technocracy is here. I mean, they're probably listening to me right now, just to be honest, right? Like, I've been trying my best to get rid of all the Google products in my life, and it is hard. It's so hard to get rid of everything. Like, I can't find a replacement right now for Google Drive. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm putting on there, and I'm like, well, I know that they're going to be able to look at what I'm doing. And it's everywhere. Like, it's literally everywhere. And the thing is that what I didn't know until I left is that they own a large part of the education computing segment. So all these Chromebooks that are going out. They also own a large amount of these SSL certificates that are being done for security purposes on these websites. And they can just go ahead and, with the flick of a switch, disable the certificates at the root level for entire sections of the economy. And people just go down because all of a sudden their connection can't be trusted anymore. And the thing is that it's built into the browser so that you can't visit those non-encrypted connections anymore. It gives all sorts of, you know, weird flags. And then, you know, their search engine has a ramification that will downrank you to the back pages, so you'll never show up. And it's just like, holy crap. Like, you know, Google has the power to rig the election. They've been caught rigging the election already, not just in the United States, but meddling in Ireland and meddling in Brazil. And, you know, this is the technocracy. This is the biggest threat that we face in America right now is Google.
I would have to absolutely agree, you know, because we've been hearing government officials and the media warning about the Russians for years. You know, now it's been years, literally, how they're meddling in our elections and everything. But, you know, to me, that's all come out that to be false anyways. You know, it was our own intelligence agencies that were meddling in the elections. And, you know, personally, I'm more concerned about Google and our own intelligence agencies meddling in our elections. You know, how concerned are you that they're going to try to influence the outcome of 2020 presidential elections here in the U.S.?
Oh, it's already started. And I've been saying for a while now that I knew that it was going to be really bad. I knew this a year ago. I mean, it's the reason why that I decided to blow the whistle, because I wanted to give patriots a heads up that this stuff is coming down the pipeline. And by doing this a year ago, I gave a full year for everyone to prepare for the eventuality of what Google was going to do, and give ammo for the lawyers that are working on our side to be able to get at that electronic discovery. Because, you know, Google's got these giant walls, and whatever they want to, you know, whatever is done, they want to make sure that they, that some lawyer can't crack open that vault and start looking at all the documents. So, you know, this is why I wanted to do this, was really to enable the lawyers to go after them. So it's, you know, and you're seeing it right now, like a bunch of people are getting banned left and right on social media, Twitter, YouTube, their voices are being silenced. If you talk about, you know, that one drug, and I don't want to say it because I'm worried about your page.
Go ahead and say it.
Don't worry about it, or should I worry about it?
No, go ahead. I believe you're talking about
HCQ. Yeah. You know, if you say HCQ, then your page can get banned, right? Zero Hedge got banned because they outed the connection of the Wuhan and the coronavirus. And, you know, it's out of control. And clearly China is, and this is the thing that I realized, is I didn't realize the scope that China was actually involved on a planetary scale, but they've got their fingers in everything. And I think that they actually have more influence in the world than possibly America at this point, not in a cultural way, but in a, like, we're buying up everything sort of way, right? Like I go to Costa Rica, you know, or I hear about it in Brazil, you know, and it's just like China's buying up this, China's buying up that, they're flooding in. When I left YouTube, it had gone from about like 30% Chinese to like 70% Chinese. I was like one of the few white people still remaining. And so I was just like, okay, well, this is interesting. Like, you know, there's a bunch of Chinese nationals coming into the company. And so, you know, right now what we're seeing is we're seeing that China is meddling in the election using these tech companies and the DNCs as proxies.
That's very interesting. You know, personally, you know, I'm not going to get into it, you know, but since I already started to, I guess, you know, it's basically two sides of the same coin is kind of how I looked at it. And if voting really mattered, they'd probably make it illegal anyways. But, you know, you're right. We have been seeing a massive increase in the censorship, and it used to be more subtle, you know, but right now it's more blatant and very much out in the open for everyone to see. And I believe that they're wanting people to self-censor as well, you know, by just having that blatant censorship. So people are going to be like, you know, like you were just concerned, and I would thank you for that, about saying hydroxychloroquine. You don't want to say it because you don't want my channel, this video, to get taken down. I understand, but I refuse to self-censor, you know, and we can't cave in to, you know, this technocracy, you know, as you rightfully call it. But, you know, ultimately, how dangerous do you believe that the censorship is or can be, at, you know, if it keeps getting worse? And
I mean, the worst case scenario, I mean, that could be an entire, like, interview, me talking about the worst case scenario, because I've thought about this a lot. I'm like, what is the, you know, final sort of like extension of everything? Like, what's the final form? And the way that I saw it is that and a lot of this is actually from the QAnon phenomenon. I was like, well, what if they're able to generate like something like the Q phenomenon, like via AI with selective disclosures about truth? And then like, but then they're able to micro target that. And so it's like, let's say instead of like a psychological operation that collectivizes, you know, hundreds of millions of people, maybe you're just collectivizing 100,000. But, you know, instead of one, you've got, let's say, 1,000 of these, right? So now they go over the country, and now everyone's got this like own selective truth about something, and they're siloed. So they're not like sharing anything. And essentially what you can do is you can balkanize the psychology space, the topology of these countries into these bulk, you know, where they don't share an ideology. They all think that they've got the right idea. And the end state is that they end up just fighting because they engage in some sort of like victim culture that is perpetrated by this AI that say, oh, they're like, you know, doing all this stuff, and they really radicalize the people. And then they go and they try to talk to someone outside of their clique, and they realize that they've just got a totally different ideology that is fundamentally incompatible. Kind of like today's like left versus right dialectic, but like, you know, scaled up to like from 2 to 1,000. And, you know, insert coin, create cult. That's essentially what, and I'm not saying that Q is a cult, but I am saying that a model like that through AI could create these auto cults where rich billionaires or the banking cartels just balkanize everyone up and then get them into perpetual like division and inter, you know, person conflict. And no one's got any idea of what's really going on. And we're just fighting all the time while they're slowly killing us down to like, you know, 100 billion people. Like, that's the worst case scenario that I see.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. And I mean, it falls right into their divide and conquer strategy, which, you know, has been playing out for quite some time now. And I don't think we've seen as much division as is taking place right now. I think people are more divided than ever. And that keeps us weak, because if we're so busy fighting each other over frivolous, you know, things in the big picture sense, then we'll never see where the real threat is targeting all of us. You know, we're all targets of this same system of oppression. Now, speaking about AI, I wanted to ask you about Google's AI project called DeepMind. What can you tell us about that? Because that sounds pretty scary.
So, like, remember how chess AI, like a couple decades ago, was progressing like kind of like it was like, oh, it's getting better. And now they're like, oh, it can actually like defeat the chess grandmaster. And then it like exceeded that. And then they're like, wow, it had this like alien intelligence. But then they had this like this new benchmark. And they're like, you know, Go is such a harder game that no AI will be able to defeat a human player for the next decade. And then it was like something like the next year or two after that. It was like DeepMind's like, ta-da, we beat everyone in Go and we've mastered the game. And then like a year later, they're like, hey, instead of taking 3 months to train it, we're able to do the same training in 2 hours. And now, and the way that DeepMind works is that, you know, they've got these like neural nets, and these neural nets are kind of like your brain cells. They pass along information when they've got like inputs on one side, and then they fire off an action potential down the axon. And so neural nets kind of work as the same way, like a single, you know, simulated neuron has as inputs other connections or in the beginning, it's actually the input, right? And it gets it and it basically gets a signal. And then based upon certain weights of like certain patterns that it sees on its inputs, it will then fire its own output, which is the input to the next layer in the neural net. And that doesn't seem like it could actually, you know, create an emergent intelligence, but it actually can, right? And the whole thing is, how do you train these things to fire in the proper sequence so that they can form, you know, these logic centers that can solve problems? And so if you train these things on, let's say, like a game of Go, the neurons will self-organize in a way that allows them to maximize their chances of winning. And this is essentially what DeepMind is. And they've been doing interesting things like transference, which is one of the new things that they've been doing, where they say, hey, well, you know, if we train something to be strategic in checkers, like that's actually kind of similar to chess, even though chess is way more advanced. Let's try to take a checkers AI and then convert it into a chess playing AI. Or let's get an AI that knows how to wash the dishes, and then we'll transfer it so it knows how to dry the dishes. So it's kind of these adjacent spaces in problems that they're able to like now solve with these AI transferences. And so now you've got this like this like AI system. And now let's say you feed it like all the information that's in Wikipedia, right? What are you gonna get? You're basically gonna get like this godlike AI intelligence that you can feed it whatever you want, and it's going to give you back answers. And we're seeing this sort of emerge now, even on the open source projects. There's something new coming out called GPT-3, it's you ask any question, it like tells you like what the answer is based upon, you know, mountains of data that you could never ever read through in your lifetime that it's able to reference, and so it's these sorts of like AIs are now emerging, but. You know, and that's just in the public sphere. This DeepMind is private and it's siloed and it's funded by the world's most powerful technology company like ever. And, you know, this is a really dangerous thing because not only is it a threat to humanity, but China has supposedly gotten access to this. And this is an open question of how much access that they have, because they had a Chinese national by the name of Feifei Lei, who was from Stanford. She came in Google, I think around like 2017 or 2018. And she came in, and what she said is that when it comes to Google and AI, they don't have borders nor boundaries. And this is a really big problem, because, you know, she helped establish Google's office in China. And because Google is a global corporation, one side of the hand, just like in the same way that I was able to see all the documents of fake news, you know, was this Chinese office able to see their DeepMind technology and get a copy of it? And if they got a copy of it, the issue there is that in 2017, the president of China stated that anything that was developed or available within China that had a military application had to be shared with the People's Liberation Army. I've got 5 minutes now before I got to go to my next thing. But, you know, the big question, and this actually caused Peter Thiel to write an op-ed in the New York Times accusing Google of treason. And I had an article posted in Breitbart from a podcast that I did with one of them, you know, basically saying the same story that I just said now, like, you know, there's all this connection and this pipeline, this free access pipeline for this godlike AI intelligence to get right into China. Did they get access to it? And we still don't have an answer on that, right? Like, Google's been very dodgy about whether China has, you know, and obviously we can't go to China and ask them, like, hey, did you steal all this technology from us? Because they're going to be like, of course not. So, you know, that's the big threat. Like, what do they know and what do they have and what are they going to use it for?
Wow. Zach, you know, thanks so much for the time that you have. I know that you're running out of time. You got to get going. But real quick here, you have something big in the works taking place mainly behind the scenes right now. But you can you tell us a little bit more about this project called Stop Bit Burning? And what can we expect from this? Tell us about this, please.
We're going to stop the censorship on YouTube. So the fascists of 100 years ago burned books. And the fascists of today burn bits. Every single time a video gets deleted off of YouTube, every single time a site gets delisted from the Google index, that's an act of burning bits. And so we're going to stop the burning of bits with our Stop Bit Burning campaign. And our Stop Bit Burning is an organization with Dustin Nemos, who created this Q-book. And we're basically using this where we go one, we go all mentality. And what we're doing is that we're collectivizing the YouTube people that have been censored, all the influencers, such as yourself. And what we're doing with this is we're going to launch a campaign to raise money from the audience members, you know, ask for $5, same as you would buy a copy, just, you know, give it to us and we'll protect the freedom of speech. And what we're going to do is we're going to take this money and we're going to file a class action lawsuit against Google for their collusion activities and for their torturous interference in the exchange of commerce, because that's what they're doing. And they're doing it for not good Samaritan reasons. They're doing it for a political agenda. And they need to be held account of what they're doing. And right now they're protected under Section 230 as long as they, you know, promise to not do any sort of censorship beyond censorship of the obscene. Well, obviously they're breaking that side of the agreement. And so we're waiting for the right moment to be able to launch this lawsuit, whether we get clarification from the FCC or Trump, or whether Steve Wozniak is able to succeed in his lawsuit against YouTube. And so right now, you know, we've been getting testimonies from YouTube content creators, and we've gotten a lot of influential people who I'm not comfortable saying who it is right now, but you'll know about it shortly. You know, by coming together, we believe that class action lawsuits can be really effective. And so that's what Stop Bit Burning is all about. You can find our website at stopbitburning.com and check it out. And if you know of an influencer Tell them about what we're doing. Sign up for a newsletter. It's tens of thousands already. And if you want to throw like a cup of coffee, like $5 our way, you know, there's a donate button on there. You can go ahead and click it if you want. So that's what Stop Bitburning is all about.
Fantastic. Zach Voorhees, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. I'll leave links to stopbitburning.com. I'll leave links to ZachVoorhees.com and to your Twitter and anything else you'd like as well. And definitely look forward to having you back again soon. Thanks so much for your time. And I'd like to thank the audience who, you know, watches and shares these reports. I can't thank you guys enough. Definitely share this information. This is important. And visit stopbitburning.com. Zach Voorhees, thank you. Any final points you'd like to mention?
Spiro, I just want to say thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I'm getting into this fight because I want to protect voices like you, because like we've never had a decentralized news commentary system in the history of the planet, right? Well, I mean, I guess they did, like that's how the original one, but we haven't had it in the last 100 years. So what you're doing, it has tremendous importance, and I just pray that you just continue to just be a guiding light in these dark times.
Thank you. Thank you for everything, Zach. And I can't wait to watch this lawsuit come together, this class action lawsuit come together. It's very exciting. So look forward to talking again soon once this thing launches officially. And I hope to have you back very soon, Zach. Thank you so much for everything you do as well.
Thank you very much, Spiro. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.